The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Houston and Şengün going at Domantas Sabonis and the referees allowing Sabonis to play super physical and not blow the whistle. And if he's allowed to do that, that's a huge advantage. So I think you have to be cognizant of the perimeter. You know, that's been an Achilles heel a little bit of the Grizzlies' defense at times, is leaving guys open. This team has guys that can knock it down, whether it's Herter, even though his numbers are down, whether it's Monk, whether it's Fox, who can shoot the three. DeMar DeRozan's not a three-point shooter. That may be an impact on why they're at where they're at, or why they're at where they are. Trey Lyles coming off the bench can knock down threes. You know, this is not a team you want to just get lost clogging the paint to prevent Fox driving or Sabonis posting up and getting mid-range looks. You've got to make sure you're staying connected on the perimeter. I think it's going to be an up-and-down match, even though the Kings aren't near the top in pace. They will push the tempo with their group. They have decent depth. I really respect their backup point guard, Jordan McLaughlin, who was in Minnesota and, you know, was one of those chip-on-the-shoulder guys. Didn't get drafted out of USC, fought his way into the league a little undersized, but he can run the offense and show. I love these matchups. I think they're fun. I think it's fun to see these two point guards go toe-to-toe, and it's fun to see Jaren and Domantas Sabonis do their thing against one another as well.
Eric, good luck tonight.
Guys, thank you. Have a great weekend.
That is Eric Hasseltine, Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. When we come back, let's get into the list. Let's talk about some of those college hoops last night. Tigers pull away from La Tech late. We also had the conclusion of the SEC-ACC challenge. During last night, that was dominated by the SEC. We also have perhaps maybe a shocking North Carolina head coaching candidate. We'll discuss all that when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Tiger basketball. Yeah, Cobb, we got back into it last night. Absolutely brutal beat for anyone that had Tigers minus 11.5. Totally not speaking from experience to see the Tigers hit two free throws to go up 12, defying the odds to get outside the number, only to have a missed three followed up by a dunk at the buzzer that was reviewed off screen, which apparently counted. But again, I have no idea what I'm talking about. Tigers knock off La Tech 81-71. It was another situation in which the Tigers, I felt like a couple of times in the first half, they built like a 10-point lead. I'm like, okay, this is going to be kind of what they need to show, which is, all right, stop farting around in these games, put somebody away. Everyone is going to obviously compare this team to last year's team. I did not feel like this was some type of indictment on the Tigers. I really felt like this was Louisiana Tech getting hot from three and keeping a game close that largely I felt like the Tigers outplayed them. But at the same time, made shots count. And the Tigers did not make as many, and they even had multiple stretches without baskets. I just really felt like it was more La Tech bombing from three than I did it was Memphis really played around with its food.
Louisiana Tech made 13 out of 23 from beyond the arc. Their previous season high was 10 makes.
Yeah.
So naturally, that's, I think, what kept them in the game. Now,
it did not help also that there was a guy named Al Green that was bombing in from three.
And then Amari Abram, he was the old Ole Miss transfer playing for them. And then Daniel Bacho, he's been around at Arizona and Texas Tech. So, like, that's a good team. I realize they were coming in off of a loss to Southern, but they were picked to win Conference USA. So not a slouch, not a pushover of a team coming in there. And Penny kind of pointed out after the game, hey, we knew this was going to be their Super Bowl. I don't know. Like, there's a part of me like that can write it off as like, well, it was a little closer than we wanted, but it's just because Louisiana Tech got hot. But there are some recurring warning signs with the defense for me. I don't think that Memphis defense is quite at its peak yet. And I think the offense has been carrying more weight. And I think eventually those things are going to – well, I know the offense is going to kind of peter down a little bit. I mean, there's no way they can keep shooting this well from three-point range through the entirety of the season. But hopefully, as that three-point percentage creeps down just due to the laws of basketball, their defense will improve. I got to see a little bit more from the Tigers on the defensive side.
No, I mean, to your point, the Tigers right now, like, if you want to look at it from this perspective and say, hey, this is something that's a trend, the Tigers are 316th nationally in KenPom on three-point percentages allowed. Well, what hurt them last night? They were allowing teams to make threes. I mainly look at it, I'm still kind of viewing it eye-testy, which, to be clear, is probably not a great way to do it because it's largely like, it's kind of, you can make the argument it's emotional. I just think last year when they were farting around in these games, it was an effort problem. I did not feel like last night was an effort problem. Like, I thought they were game for pretty much all of the game. I just think that they had massive lulls in making shots.
These dudes go balls to the wall like every moment of every game. Like, they really do. When you watch Memphis, you cannot question the effort. Or if there have been stretches where you can, I've missed those stretches because they play hard, man. They really do.
No, even in first halves, like when Miami and Ohio, Ohio and Missouri, they fell behind. I didn't really feel like it was effort. Like, I think that they got kind of caught out of position, but I didn't feel like it was like a lack of effort.
Right, which is almost concerning. Like, you almost wish there was a 90% gear that you could put it in against a CUSA team or against an Ohio or something where you could just kind of come out and cruise control it. The fact that you don't really have that is a little alarming. Like, think about the caliber of the opponent last night was very similar to the caliber of opponent that you're going to see oftentimes in the AAC. In fact, I'd actually say Louisiana Tech probably a little better than your run-of-the-mill AAC team. And if you go on the road in the AAC and you're playing against a team like that, and you know you kind of have that sort of defensive effort, that's where you get burned. That's where you get picked off. So, you know, I mean, they're shooting the cover off the ball. It's great to see. You just, again, I don't know how sustainable that is. And if assuming it's not, I mean, they've still, at this moment, ranked number one in the country in three-point percentage at 45.5%. And if that creeps down to 38% by season's end, is the defense going to be enough better to compensate for that?
No, I think it's a very fair point. I mean, to the point that you're making about quality of opponent, right now, La Tech, despite the loss, 105 in KenPom, the only teams that rank better in the AAC than 105 is FAU at 99, North Texas at 67, Wichita State at 91. Yeah, that's it. Because UAB is even down to 137 because what a dreadful start they've had.
Did you? It's probably changed over the last couple of days, but I retweeted the Wichita Eagle beat writer who does a really good job there, Eldridge.
Yeah.
And we've Memphis, had Taylor on the program. At least as of a couple of days ago, had twice as many quad one and quad two victories as the entire rest of the AAC combined. So that puts in perspective just how dismal the AAC is going to be. Hey, but the fun part is we don't have to worry about that yet with Memphis basketball because there's a really good stretch of games coming up starting this weekend against Arkansas State, which that's another one of those teams that is supposed to be among the best in their league. They got a chance to win the Sun Belt's auto bid. And then you get into this stretch of games against ACC and SEC teams. And, you know, you got Clemson on there. You just saw Clemson the other night take down Kentucky. So there's some really fun, like, big-time showcase opportunities still ahead in the next few weeks.
And I get it. It was Kentucky coming to Little John Coliseum, but that was a great environment on Tuesday night, right? Yeah, it was Tuesday night. That was a great environment.
Finally, like, a warranted court storm, too. Like, we've had so many of these, like, court storms and field rushings where you're just like, what are we doing? But like, I will totally allow Clemson to rush the court after beating number four, number three Kentucky at home. I mean, come on. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Speaking of ACC, SEC challenge.
You just made the list.
All right. As Cobb has mentioned, the SEC wins the challenge 14-2. And I mentioned at the start of the show, I think oftentimes when we try to take these conference challenges, we try to make broad sweeping accusations or make draw conclusions. And I think sometimes they're kind of without context. But this wasn't 11-7. This was 14-2. And I think this is where I think the SEC money is showing. SEC basketball, like Lane talked about it yesterday that he thinks, hey, we're heading to a universe where every great football player is going to be on one of the 16 SEC rosters. Now, I think that's a little extreme because I think Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, and Oregon, like Oregon by some accounts, finished number one. I think they're going to have something to say about the recruiting. But I do think we're heading to a universe where 20 teams are largely going to have all of the players unless rules are changed. But if this is kind of where we're headed, I think the money issue is going to display itself in basketball much more quickly than it is in football, primarily because you have fewer guys on the floor. And what we're seeing in the SEC is, I mean, Chris Beard, when he turns down Arkansas, reportedly the NIL budget went up to $5 million. Best I can tell is that's about middle of the pack for the SEC. And so I don't think that this was some type of anomaly. I don't think this was some type of bad day. I think what this showed is that the SEC in particular is spending on basketball, and this was no fluke, whereas the ACC, which has largely been a basketball league, I think you're seeing a lot of schools that are really hesitant. And it's no surprise to me that, you know, essentially Duke is one of the teams that has the biggest win, the headliner, in my opinion, especially considering how well Auburn's been playing.
Right.
But like the rest of the league, it's a different like category of sport that you're playing when you consider the amount of money that goes into SEC rosters versus the run-of-the-mill ACC roster.
I mean, it's a random example, but it comes to mind. Sean Padula was one of the best players at Virginia Tech. He's now playing for Ole Miss. What? That doesn't make any sense. Why would you transfer from Virginia Tech to Ole Miss? Well, probably because of money. And now all of a sudden, you know, he's doing as much for Ole Miss as he was for Virginia Tech. Ole Miss looks like one of the best teams. I mean, Ole Miss would be the second best team in the ACC right now, and they're probably like a middle-of-the-pack SEC team. So, you know, at the moment, I think you got 10 SEC schools, top 40 of the net. You only got 3 from the ACC. And people want to say November and December don't matter in college basketball. If you live in Memphis, you know that's not true, because you know November and December mean a whole heck of a lot for the Tigers. But man, like, don't tell me that. Like, when Selection Sunday comes around and the SEC gets 10 bids to the NCAA tournament and the ACC maybe gets 5, maybe, those ACC coaches are going to go, well, we don't get
any. 3 last year?
Well,
wasn't there just 3
right.
last
so,
year?
Like, 5 would be a generous helping for the ACC from an at-large point of view. And 10 might even be short for the SEC. I mean, you know, you listen to Jimmy Dykes, he's trying to put 11 or 12 SEC teams in the field already here in early December. But my point is, these non-conference results matter. And I know some fans are like way too interested in college football to care about college basketball right now. I get it. But that doesn't mean that the games that are going on don't matter. Just because you're not watching them or not paying attention, like they still count. The net rankings are still getting refreshed every day. And the SEC is not only better than the ACC, as we clearly saw the last couple of days, they are right now clearly the best conference in America.
How shocking is that to you?
I mean, it is, but it's been trending in this direction for a while. I think what's probably the most surprising is that some of these middle-of-the-pack teams are really, like, on the up and up. Like, the fact that a Mississippi State is right now number 10 in the net, they've been able to sustain it under Chris Jans. The fact that Ole Miss has taken such a large leap. If you knew Chris Beard's track record, maybe you're not as shocked by that. But, you know, Georgia, another one. Like, they've been bad They've been bad under Mike White, but they went out and got Asa Newell, who's a five-star guy, a top 15 prospect. He's been awesome for him. You're not seeing mid-lower-tier ACC schools landing top 15 prospects right now. Georgia is, and he's helping them a lot. And then the last one I'll mention, and they're very deserving of it, is Oklahoma. They are one of those newcomers, and you're kind of wondering, all right, like, is Oklahoma actually going to add anything to the SEC in basketball? Well, they're sitting here at 8-0, and they just won their multi-team event. They don't even have a superstar on their roster, but you know, Porter Mosier has done a really good job with that group. So there are no easy wins, really, in the SEC. I mean, even Vanderbilt looks like it's pretty competent under Mark Byington in year one. So, I mean, it's going to be as good as the SEC's ever been in basketball.
Yeah, I was trying to see. Right now, the lowest-ranked SEC team in KenPom is Vandy at a very nice – I'm very pardon, South Carolina at a very nice 69. Vandy's at 68.
Nice.
Murray or Missouri at 60, LSU at 49, Arkansas at 43. That's the other thing is, like, you know, I mean, that's I don't suspect that Arkansas is going to be there for a while, but I think this should be kind of a wake up call for what the ACC's reality is, because I mentioned this earlier this week. I'm curious to know. I think Tuesday was a very bad day for the ACC because I thought the committee basically came out and told us, hey, SMU, you better win. Because I think that there's this belief amongst people that are watching that as long as SMU doesn't get blown out, that they're gonna get that last spot. It'll bump Bama out. I will be stunned if that happens. And I think what they were telling us is, hey, we put Bama ahead of Miami for a reason. Because, again, you're going to put somebody flawed in at 12. I think we can all agree with that. But to me, there was nothing that suggested, when you look at resume, when you look at form, there's nothing that suggests to me that Alabama should be separated from the pack of South Carolina and Ole Miss. Like, you got to pick one. I get that. But at the same time, the fact that they moved them out of that pack ahead to another tier, there's no justification for it other than, hey, we're trying to avoid what happened to us last year. We're going to do this a week early so that it's not jarring. And then on top of that, you go 9-1, or you go 1-9 in the SEC Challenge. It's like, that's supposed to be your sport. And it wasn't until the very last game that he even got the one. Yes, you got Duke gets the big win over Auburn. Massive, massive win. But it's like, man, you had so many non-competitive games against the SEC.
I mean, Pitt just getting absolutely waylaid by Mississippi
State. God, they had like 25 points with like 10 minutes left.
Bizarre. Terrible couple of days for Jim Phillips. I would love to see SMU get in over Alabama if SMU loses to Clemson in the ACC championship game. Do I really believe that's going to happen? No, because I think the College Football Playoff Selection Committee will use whatever criteria they want to use to justify including Alabama over a potential SMU. But that's tough, man, because SMU's one loss right now is against BYU, a 10-2 BYU team. And their second loss maybe being on a neutral field against Clemson in the ACC championship game. Come on. Like, we just saw Alabama get waxed by a bad Oklahoma team. Like, I get it. Their strength of schedule is, like, they have a marquee victory, and SMU doesn't. But, I mean, Alabama getting in over SMU, if SMU is penalized for having lost the ACC championship game, that just, I mean, if I'm Brett Lashley, if that ever happens again, I'm just going to say, sorry, we're not going to play.
Yeah, but, like, they also have, like, they can actually get money for this game because they can get the merit-based money. So they can get money for this game. I don't know. I think the biggest problem that the College Football Playoff has is that it can't be honest about what it is as a product, because we can slice and dice it however we want. Let's be clear. This is the SEC, and this is the Big Ten's party, and they're inviting other people to it.
Yeah.
Because of that, but they, you know, they want to market it like, hey, you know, this is the committee and these are the people making the decisions. I don't believe that committee's unilaterally making decisions. I don't think they just hand in here's what we believe. Like, I just don't. Like, there's too many eyebrow moments where you're like, okay, I'm not sure they're acting unilaterally. With that said, the biggest problem is this was a great year for the 12-team playoff in the sense that we've spread out the talent remarkably, but it was a bad year for the 12-year playoff because we haven't figured out the balance of scheduling. Because it's one of those things where if you look at some of these other leagues where you've had teams separate, well, it's largely been because the middle and the bottom part of these leagues are so bad, and so you don't have these opportunities to go and stub your toe. Whereas if you put Mississippi State aside, every team in the bottom half of the SEC has beaten one of the top teams in, like, critical fashion, whether it be the Oklahoma game, whether it be Auburn beating A&M, Florida
Kentucky
beating Ole Miss. Yeah, I mean, like all of them have at least one win where you're like, damn. And so I think the problem is that most people feel is I don't really think everybody has the problem of Alabama getting in. It's the everyone's sitting there going, you're treating Alabama like it's Saban's Alabama. And if you've watched football, you know this is not Saban's Alabama.
Yeah, you had a good tweet about that the other night. I thought you nailed it. Like, why are we giving this version of Alabama
Correct. The
benefit of the doubt?
Like, honestly, so I thought Florida State got screwed because you went undefeated. Like, I think you get a chance. I still think Alabama was better than them. So, like, in the end, like, I wasn't that bent out of shape. I was like, yeah, man, you kind of got screwed.
Well, and at the end of the day, they do say their goal is to get the 12 best teams.
You know what I mean. But that's, like, my perfect point. That's the marketing. If it were the 12 best teams, these are not the teams we're putting in.
Well, sure. I mean, you there wouldn't be a Big 12 team if you were going for the 12 best in all likelihood. And if Clemson beat SMU, you'd have to have a hard conversation about whether Clemson even deserved it. So, and then as it pertains to the rankings and deciphering the strength of schedule and all this, I agree because Georgia's at 5. Georgia should be ahead of Penn State and should be ahead of Notre Dame. Based on the quality of their schedule, the caliber of their victories, and the absolute lack of any marquee wins for Penn State and for Notre Dame. But Penn State and Notre Dame only have one loss. So it's like, well, Georgia has two losses, so we got to rank them below those guys. But
that
doesn't add up when you actually look at what Georgia has accomplished.
It's why I can't quit Georgia. Like, I believe this. How many teams in the country would have a 10-2 record if they had to play Georgia's schedule?
Yeah, not many. I don't know that Notre Dame would. That's for damn sure.
I don't know if
Notre
Ohio
Dame
State would. I don't know if wins. Oregon would.
Who?
I don't know if Ohio State's 10-2 and played a much softer schedule.
Right.
I don't think Ohio State.
Yeah.
And so, I'm not convinced Oregon would.
Georgia beat Clemson 34-3 on a neutral. They beat Texas 30-15 on the road.
And it wasn't that
and they
close.
They handled Tennessee 31-17 at home pretty easily. And their losses... here's the one that I always come back to, that 28-10 clunker at Ole Miss, man. And that's kind of why I think Ole Miss is a little bit disrespected here at 13 because they've got a two blowout wins over really good teams. They crushed South Carolina on the road, and then they just beat the brakes off of Georgia at home. And now somehow they're two spots below Alabama. That doesn't really add up to me, the fact that Ole Miss ended up two spots behind
Well, it's because
I get it. They lost at home to Kentucky. No, maybe that's all the justification the committee needs.
But here's the other thing. Oklahoma's not that much better than Kentucky, but it's Oklahoma. Like, that's a huge part of it. Because if you look at it metrically, I think Kentucky's at 4-8, and I think they're like 45th in SP Plus. Like that's the other thing. When you parse out the strength of schedule, David Hale did a great job of it. Basically, the difference in Ole Miss and Alabama's strength of schedule, which is, I think, separated by like 14 places, is basically Alabama played Western Kentucky and Ole Miss played MTSU. Other than that, their schedule is like the exact same.
Well, and you think about it, Ole Miss led for the entirety of regulation in that LSU loss, somehow found a way to lose the game. If Berrion Brown doesn't somehow break loose down the left sideline and Brock Vandegrift makes the one good pass he threw all season, this is so maddening right now for Ole Miss.
If Surtain Perkins brings down Garrett Nussmeier.
Absolutely.
Well, here's the other, you want to do the other domino? What are we talking about if Napier makes the decision to go for two in Knoxville that day and gets it?
Woo.
I mean, all of a sudden you have 9-3 Tennessee. And I want to be clear. Part of this is like, you know what? Tennessee found itself in the same spot that Ole Miss did in Nashville last Saturday. And you know what they did? They blew the doors off of them after that first quarter. And it's like, we're going to be kind of having to nitpick these teams. And my deal is the Kentucky loss, yeah, that's a bomb for Ole Miss. They still got a mulligan. You just had to go to Gainesville and win by a freaking right. point.
Yeah.
One.
Yeah.
That's it. Now, would I favor Ole Miss against Alabama if they played tomorrow? I would, but at the same time, it's like you kind of gave up your right. You gave up, like, you were, when you lost and in Gainesville that day, you officially announced this is going to be a judge's decision and the judges can make the decision that they want to make.
Yeah, and I think ultimately the trump card for Alabama, the win over Georgia combined with, I guess, the win over South Carolina.
But Ole Miss's win over South Carolina is more impressive.
Ole Miss's win over Georgia. Yeah, I'm with you, man. Like, I can't look at Alabama and Ole Miss side by side and say, yeah, Alabama's two spots better than Ole Miss. I get it. The Kentucky loss is an albatross, but the Oklahoma loss is an albatross for
Alabama. They scored 3 points.
So it's maddening. It's maddening.
All right, let's take a break. We were going to talk about Bill Belichick apparently interviewed for North Carolina. Will either of us?
Hey-o.
He's not going to be the North. There's no way Bill Belichick's coaching college football.
Maybe I no right like
no.
what
no chance
Bill Belichick no chance.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Jason Smith.
Hey, it's Mark Schler with the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. The NFL season is in full swing, and I'll be here to break down all the action like no one else can. Follow and listen to the Stinkin' Truth Podcast on your free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's going to join the program. Stick around and listen to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jason, was last night a troubling result for the Memphis Tigers?
No, I don't think so at all. It was if you had the...
That was brutal. I had 11.5.
The points.
Yeah, I did.
Like I've heard from a couple others that did as well. And so I feel bad for you guys. But no, man, I mean, you know, surely you would have liked to have seen maybe a more complete sort of what we've been talking about all season. You know, these first halves where the pressure hasn't been to Penny's liking because he tells us that at halftime and says it's going to be better than it is in the second half. But then also, they've just been a better offensive team in the second half. You'd like to see a little bit more balance maybe. But I can't pick at a... You know, a win over La Tech. Plenty of teams yesterday went down, albeit to better teams. Right now, it's just about winning and keeping this thing going, and especially coming off Maui. You know, last week, what was it, last time they played Wednesday? And so you get the layoff, maybe a chance to get Haggerty and Tyrese, who have been banged up all year, some extra rest, but you want to come out with a good performance and obviously not drop anything before you get to, you know, those four straight really important games. Don't want to look past Arkansas State, obviously, but Clemson, Virginia, Mississippi State, and Ole Miss. I mean, that really feels like, Jeffrey, where the rest of, barring a collapse like last year, they go on to do what we expect in the AAC. It's in that four-game stretch now where we're pretty much, I would think, going to be able to, you know, maybe determine a little bit better in terms of where the Tigers could be seated for the NCAA tournament. That's where the majority of the rest of your work is going to be done because, as we know, there is nothing in terms of quality wins to get in the American. I think North Texas right now might be the second highest rated team.
It is.
In terms of KenPom. And they're, what, 60?
67,
whatever.
I believe. I just looked at it, yeah.
Wichita State, I think, has dropped to the 90 or something.
91, I believe.
Yes, but it's not good. These are not the years of having a Houston or an FAU in there. So, yes, you got to get this work done. Last year, Penny was telling the team, our non-conference is our season. And we have talked about that and how, you know, with the makeup of that team, how that mindset did not work for them. Because by the time they get to 4-0 and think everybody's going to roll over in the AAC, you know, hit a little adversity, boy, it all came apart. The same thing applies just so long as you don't blow it in conference. This is your season in the non-conference. And, yes, getting that win last night, the one Sunday over Arkansas State, obviously those are home games you need. You lose those, that's tough on your resume. Those are bad losses. You want to keep the momentum going, and for the most part they did last night. So I would say they passed another test.
All right, so Jason, the last time Memphis had Musa Cisse on the roster was that 2020-21 season. Hey, they ranked number one in defensive efficiency at KenPom that season. This time around, they're down at 53, and I don't know, it kind of feels like to me the defense is the one thing that really needs to improve. Where are you at on this defense? What do they have to do to get better? Because the rim protection is there with Musa and even Dane Danger a little bit. I mean, where does this team need to improve defensively?
It needs to improve, and that number needs to go up. I will say, though, Cobb, that going into Maui or before, you're facing UConn, Michigan State, and then what Auburn was able to do to you offensively, that number was higher. I want to tell you 25, 30 was getting closer. If it was in the 30s, still closer to what we've sort of recognized. No, not the number one defense that Penny had. He's also at a top five as well, but starting to get more recognizable. If you watch last night, they scored 31 points off 20 turnovers forced. I know it's La Tech, and know you weren't able to get that kind of production off your defense against those higher quality teams in Maui. But, David, I think the eye test has told us that, you know, whether it's the makeup of the guys, you know, Dogs, Tyrese Hunter's willingness to get up into people, and we knew that about him coming over, obviously from the Power Four. It feels different. It feels they're capable of turning up the pressure. Now, the difference is they don't have as many bodies. And so I think Penny has probably picked his spots more, whereas, you know, at one point I think Penny, as a college coach, was thinking 40 minutes of hell is the way to go. You know, with this shorter rotation, they've had to pick their spots. Again, this is, you know, before La Tech last night, it was the seventh toughest non-conference strength of schedule. And so some of these teams, like in Auburn, have just been damn good. I think by the time, to make a long answer short here, I think by the time we get around to conference play and, you know, through the Arkansas States and everything else, you're going to see this Memphis team lock down. Hey, if it's in the 40s, you know, that's closer to what you've been those first 5 years under Penny, because last year, Cobb, you saw it slipped into the hundreds. And so this is certainly a lot closer to where you've been. I think you take out last year, his worst year defensively, like 58 his first year, with half Tubby guys and half his guys. And so I think eventually, barring injuries, again, they're shorthanded. Musa, Dane, those guys lock in. I think that's the difference, too, between last year and this year, is you've got a true rim protector. So it'll end up where it needs to be. And you got to remember, that's one of the things. It wasn't just chemistry, Dogs, and guys who were going to fit together better. It's guys who could get back to playing some penny-level defense, at least those first 5 years in Memphis. And I think they're getting back to that. But obviously still room for improvement.
All right, switching gears on you a little bit. We packing up. We road tripping to Frisco for next Tuesday a week from Tuesday.
Are you going? Because when you say we, I am. I certainly will not be on the trip. Now, listen. This is. It sounds like this is what they wanted. I mean,
100%. Now is teams that aren't going to be a part of it. They want to get their bowl game done sooner.
Get your bowl game done sooner, and let's talk about it. Optically, it's going to be a chance to beat another Power Four in back to back years. I mean, and maybe even, you know, Big 12 here. You get a little shot at them because, you know, we talked about it. This is the Ren Baker Bowl. He's looking for a new head coach. Obviously, they are in flux. Who they'll have out there to play Memphis?
Who knows?
Exactly. And like you point out, well, you're only 12 days out, I think, from this game. So the idea that you're going to have most of your guns, less opt-outs, I would think is much higher. So, and when checked, and maybe you know off the top of your head, Blake Watson, he played in last year's game against Iowa State. I mean, he certainly had NFL aspirations and ends up in the, you know, undrafted free agent with the Broncos. But guys like Mario Anderson, you know, with this game only 12 days away, I figure, you know, there's a good likelihood most of them are going to stay in, that there should be fewer opt-outs, if any. It's a pride thing. Optically, it looks good. If you get to 11 wins, you're selling 21 wins over the last 2 years and two bowl wins over Power Four opponents. I mean, you know, that's certainly certainly something you can sell. But I won't be making the trip. I'll be watching that one on television, Jeffrey.
I'm pulling it up. Blake, yes, Blake had 15 carries for 107.
There it is. He stayed around, and like that was a guy who, you know, had NFL aspirations. So I'm hopeful they'll have, you know, whether it's Rock, all these guys, that they'll have the majority of their guys. You know, we know how much this number of wins has meant to them. And again, it is nothing to dismiss. You know, the idea of 21 wins in 2 years. But you know my deal, Jeffrey. I want to see you in a conference title game at some point soon.
Jason, we really appreciate it, buddy.
Y'all take care. Give up the good work.
That is Jason Smith, of course, of the Jason and John Show. As a reminder, the holidays, of course, is one of the biggest seasons to get engaged, and there's no better spot to get your engagement ring than Robert Irwin Jewelers. They're the number one place to buy diamond engagement rings because you get more choices. Robert Irwin Jewelers has an enormous collection of natural and lab-grown diamonds in all shapes and sizes. They can even make custom designing your engagement ring risk-free and easy. This is what I did with my wife's ring. This is what Connor did with his wife's ring. And you can do so with peace of mind, knowing that you can have the meant-to-be guarantee. That means that for any reason, if you're unhappy with your custom-made engagement ring, you have 365 days to return it at the full purchase price. Also, while you're at Robert Irwin Jewelers, check out the Daphne Diamonds. It's a one-of-a-kind collection, a combination of fashion-forward modern diamond architecture with traditional diamond-cutting techniques to create a diamond that shines visibly brighter. You can't get it anywhere else. It's so special that Howie named it after his daughter. Also, at Robert Irwin Jewelers, you can take advantage of free ring sizing for life. Also, the free jewelry spa service for life. Take your jewelry in and come out looking like the day that you bought it. You can also ask her now and pay later with financing options like 24 months deferred interest or take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. Robert Irwin Jewelers has over four decades of experience in the jewelry business. They've become a trusted name known for providing timeless treasures for generations of families. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices, all at Robert Irwin Jewelers. Five stores locally, or you can shop online at rijewelers.com. Don't forget that they're open on Sundays during the holiday shopping season. When we come back, we tell your story next, right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.